Chapter 8. The House That Mother Built. The awful sense of loneliness began to grow inside me again and create confusion in my thoughts. I tried to lose myself in reading, and Mrs. Maguire gave me lots of books. Mother saw that I was disappointed, and that, more and more, as time went on, I was thinking bitterly about the things that might have been in my life. Even between us two, Mother and I, there seemed to be a barrier, a new kind of glass wall that wouldn't let us reach one another. One Thursday evening I was sitting at my window, looking out into the gathering autumn dusk. In the kitchen behind me, I could hear the sausages in the pan as Mother got the dinner ready. Mona stood before the mirror preparing for a dance as usual, while Peter polished his shoes vigorously and gave me an enormous wink, a sure sign that he had a date on. Suddenly, from out of the corner of my eye, I saw the headlights of a car as it came round the bend in the road opposite and stopped outside our door. A man stepped out and came up the steps. "Here's someone," I grumbled. Hearing the knock, Mother went to the door to answer it. I heard her speaking to someone at the hall door, and a moment later she came back into the kitchen with the strange man. "This is Christy," she told him as they entered. I looked up at him as he stood before me, smiling down at me. I saw he was a well-built man with grey-green eyes, eyes that, while they looked at me, seemed at the same time to look into me. He sat down on a chair close by and told me he was a doctor who had seen me before as a baby. "Christy," he said in his deep, pleasant voice, "there is a new treatment for cerebral palsy. The thing that is wrong with you. I believe you can be cured, but only if you want to try hard enough with us. I can't help you if you don't try to help yourself. You must want to get better before anything can be done for you." Then he leaned forward, his eyes fixed on me. "Will you try if I help?" he asked me. "Will I try?" I thought. I couldn't speak, so I couldn't answer him. I could only stare. But he read the message in my eyes, for he stood up satisfied, came over to me, put his arm round my shoulders and said, "Right, we'll start tomorrow." He said he would send one of his assistants the next day to examine me and devise a line of treatment especially for me. They would treat me at home, as they hadn't yet formed a special clinic of their own. He stood up to go, but just as he was going out of the door, he paused and turned round. "By the way," he said to me with a slow smile, "my name's Dr. Collis. I'll see you soon." With that, he left. As the door closed upon him, I turned and looked at the faces around me. They were all lit up with happiness and excitement. Father was so overjoyed that his hand trembled as he poured me out a cup of tea. Mona had forgotten all about her dance and was smiling at me, and Peter put 2 spoonfuls of salt instead of sugar into his tea. But it was at Mother that I looked most of all. Like myself, she didn't easily show what she was feeling at any time, but there was a quiet air of joy about her that meant more to me than anything else. I listened to all the others talking excitedly around me at the table in a sort of dream. I couldn't distinguish a word. I sipped my tea absently each time Father lifted the cup to my lips and ate my bread without tasting it. It was later, as I sat round the fire with Mother and Father, when the rest had gone out to enjoy themselves after tea, that I started to think about the news. I don't think I was excited in the ordinary ways about it as the rest of the family had been. I just wondered at the strangeness and the queer beauty of it all. A doctor had suddenly come and told me that I could be cured. In a very few words, he had changed my whole life. He had given me something to fasten my thoughts and aspirations onto, something to live for, work for, and fight for at the moment when I was sure that there was nothing but empty and fruitless years before me. That night, before I went to sleep, I prayed a prayer of thankfulness and repentance for having doubted. The doctor who came out next day to examine me was a young man, tall and handsome. His name was Lewis Warnants, a name which I shall always remember with gratitude and affection. Dr. Warnants suggested a special treatment that consisted mostly of certain physical exercises which I could do myself at home with a little help from the family if I wanted it. After that, Dr. Warnants came to me every Sunday. Each time he came, he made me go through the exercises while he watched. It was very difficult for Dr. Warnants to treat me in the house because the only room available was the kitchen, and that was much too small. During exercises, when I stretched out my leg, it used to bang against the fire grate, and when I turned round on my stomach, my head was under a chair and my legs were beneath the table, so that each time I lifted my head, I hit it. "Either you're too big, Christy, or this room's too small," he said. "I think it's a mixture of both, Doctor," Mother said. "We need a little more space," said Dr. Warnants with a sigh, as I hit my head again for the fourth time that afternoon. Now Mother had an idea. Why not use the back garden? Why not build a special house on the ground at the back where we'd be away from everything? Ah, but the money. There's always the question of money. She discovered it would cost £50, a large amount of money in those days. Still, she did not let this defeat her, so she started borrowing, selling, visiting some old uncles and aunts after discovering they weren't all dead after all. When she had got about £20, she decided to start. Mother went out one afternoon and ordered 100 concrete blocks, 4 bags of cement and 2 bags of mortar. "For a start," she said. It arrived the same day. Father almost collapsed when he came home from work and saw all the blocks in the front garden. "Oh, I forgot to tell you," said Mother casually, as she put his dinner on the table. "I'm going to build a house for Christy in the back garden." "My God," said Father, staring at her. "Do you realise what you're doing? The authorities will..." "Yes, yes, I know all that," said Mother quietly. Seeing that it was useless to argue with her, Father decided not to help, and he advised the 4 other bricklayers in the house, my brothers, not to help either. But Mother just smiled and said, "Very well. If none of you will do it, I'll build it myself." They all laughed at that. The idea of a woman building a house. At about 4 o'clock the next afternoon, I suddenly noticed that Mother was spending a lot of time at the back of the house. Very curious, I managed to stumble to the window. I looked out. There was Mother, on her knees on the grass, a bucket of cement on one side of her and a jug of water on the other. She was looking proudly at the line of blocks she had already set out before her. That evening, after dinner, she went quietly back to her work in the back garden. A few minutes later, Father went into the yard. He stood still. Then slowly he approached the growing wall. He touched it with his foot. "What's this?" he asked. "What do you think you're doing?" Mother looked up. "I'm building Christy's house," she said. Father said nothing for a minute or so. He just watched. Then he looked a bit closer. At last he said, "You're doing it all wrong. Where's the foundation?" "I knew I was forgetting something," Mother answered. By this time, the other 4 bricklayers had come out and gathered round. "Look, boys," said Father, turning to them, "your mother's trying to do our work." "That's swimming for you," said Peter, "always trying to be like men." "Well, if it's a man's job, get on with it," she said. Slowly, she turned and left them. As she passed me, she smiled. The five bricklayers stood and looked at each other. "Come on," said Father, as Mother disappeared into the house. "Let's start." So they built my little house in the back garden. The thing that held us up was money. Mother's £20 went quickly, and we seemed to come to a standstill. Father asked me one day what it looked like with only the four walls built and a concrete foundation put in. "Like an unfinished symphony," I said. Then Mother managed to get another few pounds, and the work started again. Slowly, the place began to take shape. The window panes were in and the walls were plastered. As far as the actual building of it was concerned, it was finished. It only needed some bits of furniture now to make it alive. It was originally intended only to be a sort of exercise room, a gymnasium, where Dr. Warnant's could treat me undisturbed. As time went on, however, I slowly converted it into both a living room and study where I ate, read, wrote and slept. I got them to put up bookshelves, which gradually filled up one by one. So at last, I had really broken away from the family, from the noise and busy life of the house. My treatment continued with Dr. Warnant's. We were able to make improvements now that we had more space to move in. Then one day, Dr. Collis came and told me that he had decided to send me to London to see his sister-in-law, Mrs. Irene Collis, who was a well-known specialist in cerebral palsy. He wanted to get her opinion as to whether I was likely to respond to treatment before starting me on a full-scale rehabilitation program. He would ask her to examine me at the Middlesex Hospital and give him her opinion on my chances of leading a normal life. I would fly to London in a few days' time. Dr. Warnant's, who had gone over ahead of me, would meet me at Northolt Airport and drive me to the hospital to see Mrs. Collis. Mother was to travel with me. I realised then that everything depended on Mrs. Collis's verdict, that my future really lay in her hands. If she decided I couldn't benefit from treatment, then I would be back to the old life of inactivity and hopelessness again. If, on the other hand, she decided that I would respond favourably to treatment, then my life would have some meaning, some ultimate worth and value. Then I could begin to break down some of the walls that stood between me and an ordinary existence. I was at the crossroads.